Welcome to the Every Day is Saturday podcast, the number one motivation show on the planet.
No more Mondays for you. It's time to make every day Saturday. Boom!
This is the podcast where we help you to accept who you are, not where you are.
On the roller coaster of life, you know we only sit in the front seat, champion. So make sure you are fastened in. Hi, let's go.
Tired of feeling run down all the time during the week? We can help you make every day feel like it's a Saturday.
Let's go pack your bags. It's time to leave Averageville.
Introducing the man who thinks abnormal stands for above normal.
When you're on fire, people will travel from miles around to watch you burn, baby. We are fired up.
The host of the Every Day is Saturday show, Sam Crowley.
I think it was a combination of everything. During this process, I remember reading a story about Norman Vincent Peale, and he was given a presentation somewhere, and he told a story about this guy who was trying to watch a football game, and his son, he had a four-year-old son, and this little boy kept bothering him, and the father said, "Son, can't you go in the other room and play?" And the kid wouldn't go. So the father looked off to the side of him. He had a newspaper there. He had a picture of a globe on it, of a picture of the world. And he ripped the paper up. He took the globe and he tore it all up into little pieces, put it in his little son's hand. He said, "Why don't you go in the other room and see if you could put the world back together?" About 5 minutes later, the little boy came back into the room and he said, "Daddy, Daddy, I put the world back together." So the father's saying, "Man, I know my son hasn't been to school. He doesn't know anything about geography. He doesn't know anything." So when a commercial came up, he ended up going in the other room. And lo and behold, the child had actually put the world back together. And the father was just so amazed. And he says, see, grabbed his son and he hugged him. And he said, "Son, how did you actually do that?" And the little boy, this four-year-old boy, looked at his father and said, "Daddy, it was easy. On the back of the picture of the globe, there was a picture of a man. All I had to do is put the man together, and the world came together." And I never forgot that saying. And that was my intention. Once I started embarking on this journey that I'm on, before I could save the world and do anything else, I had to put my own life in order, and I had to do all these things. And I says, what's it going to take for me to make it where people, because, you know, for all my life, I wanted people to fear me. So it's a hard thing from going from the thing where people are scared to death of you. They know if they sneeze around you, you might just, you know, they just don't know how to act. Like you said in the thing, you didn't know how to act about me. So, and I said, and then the turn, the whole thing, I says, you know, some of us need to be out there. We need to be doing something. So I became useful. What I did in prison, I became, whereas I only was recognized for being a killer and a thug and all that, where I ended up becoming an expert in the field of parole. I've written two books. My other book is a how-to manual. And basically, I started learning. I stayed in the law library, started doing all this, and I became good at helping other people get out. I just couldn't get myself out. But you know, when I tell my story, and sometimes I have to pinch myself, you know, that I survived that whole thing. I've been out over 5 years. My dreams are still prison dreams. You would think after 5 years I wouldn't dream that stuff no more. But a lot of times I wake up in the night with a sweat. I mean, I'm dreaming of stuff that went on in the yard or in a stairwell or in a cell block or in a dorm. And mostly all of it's like this crazy violent stuff because, you know, New York State prisons, well, they become a little bit more domesticated now, but it's still, every day there's drama in there. I've been out 5 years. I'm fortunate. I don't have any kids. I'm single. I mean, it's not from a lack of trying. I'm 60 years old. I'm not looking to hook up with no 60-year-old women. It's a thing. I've dated. But right now, I don't have the money. I'm just having a hard time taking care of me. So I wouldn't, people always say, "Well, don't you want to make babies?" I said, "Absolutely not. If I can't take care of them, why would I bring them into this world?" My ego isn't big. And, you know, I see these, you know, I meet so many people that got, you know, five babies with all these different women and all this other stuff. And I said, no, I would never do nothing like that. But I'm good. You know, I have my bucket list of all the things that I want to do. I have a whole lot of things that I hope to do. I come up for a parole review next year, and they could release me from parole. I have all kinds of restrictions about where I can go, what I can do, who I can associate with. And, you know, my goal is, Sam, is to do what you're doing someday. You know, to have a wide audience. I have a lot of ideas. Like, man, I got about 50 more books in me, but finding the time to do them and do this. And I want to go out and I want to go on a lecture tour and things like that. I've done all the schools in Buffalo, colleges and things like that. But, you know, I know there's a big market out there. I know my story can really help a lot of us because I've received hundreds of testimonials from young kids and from their parents or their teachers or whatever, saying how my story has inspired them to do the right thing.
Well, look, I can tell you, man, the audience is out there. It's just a matter of continuing to get your message out there and let people know. Look, the best thing about you is you're a real individual. I mean, you don't hide anything. You don't make excuses. You're more focused on, like you said, speaking to the schools. I know you speak at high schools, and you put a lot of those scare tactics into the kids, rightfully so, to make them understand they don't want to do what you did, you know, back then. Let me ask you a question before we wrap up the interview with Sam Crowley from EverydayIsSaturday.com with Jerry Ballone, the author of Rising from the Ashes, talking about his story in prison and gangs and growing up and now giving back. Jerry, have you ever reached out to the family of your victims?
I would love to, but one of the conditions of my parole is that I'm not allowed to. So when I go around speaking and everything, I've done many TV interviews and that, and I always let them know how sorry I am. But, you know, it comes to things, Sam, that they may not want to forgive me. Their pain is there. But I always let them know that I would love to work with them, you know, because it all comes down to what I'm doing now. I could have took an easier route. I didn't have, you know, people when I first came out of prison, and I would tell people my story, the people at the halfway house and everybody else, my parole officer said, Jerry, that life's behind you. You don't even have to tell anybody. I didn't have to tell you. People don't want to care. And I said, no, I think my story has to be told. It's not a pretty story. It's not meant to be a pretty story. I wasn't a nice guy, you know, but it is a thing that I want to get education back into the prison system. It's been eliminated. I say, you let all these guys out of prison, you know, the thing is, without any education, they're going to go back, even though I haven't even been able to apply it in the sense of a work thing. But, you know, I feel I've been blessed that too, because I remember when you worked in that company for all those years and you felt unhappy and everything. I'm happy now because I work for myself. I know that it's just a matter of time that my book is going to get discovered or this is going to happen or that. But even if it never gets any better than it is today, I'm all right with that. You know, I'm free. You know, my co-defendant is still in prison, and he's sitting in Shawangunk, where I was 20 years ago. He's so dangerous that they're never going to let him out, and he's done nothing with his time. So people say, you know, he's done nothing, and look where I come from. So,
you ever get anybody any of your former buddies in the system who call you a sellout, who say you're not staying true to who?
No, I think most of them admire me. Many of them, again, probably, they started doing what I started doing, especially after I made parole. They realized that I learned that if I didn't change my behavior, how am I going to convince a parole board to release me? I went in front of 6 parole boards, and every time I went in there, I was just basically rubber stamped. Then we got a new governor in 2007. His name was Elliot Spitzer. He was only in for a minute, but he was a former attorney general. He truly believed that there were many in prison that didn't belong in there anymore. They had, and he told his commissioners, and we had a commissioner, George Alexander, at the time, and the commissioner says, you know, Ian Stewart, listen, if these guys can convince you that they're not the people that they used to be, give them a chance at parole, but let them know if they screw up, they're going back for life. And I was blessed, and they let me out.
And most of the people that you left behind admire you. Boy, that's good, because sometimes I would imagine when you need that, they
most
think
of them, but most of them, Sam, will not do what I did. They will not go to school. They will not take programs. They'd rather sit around, blame the system, blame everybody. You know, well, they're not going to let me go anyway, so I'm not going to school. I'm not taking those programs. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. And you know, and they the negativity in there, because prison teaches you to play the blame game. I mean, I got caught up in it too, you know, because that's what's expected of you. I blame my victims. They were supposed to be in Florida. I blame my judge who sentenced me, my DA who prosecuted me, the cops who arrested me. I blame my mom. I got caught up in that. But what I started doing, my life, real change came about is when I started taking accountability that even at the age of 8, my first arrest, I knew right from wrong. I just chose to do wrong. I always chose to do wrong. My own actions. There are people who had worse childhoods than mine who endured more than me, but they didn't do what I did. And that in itself made me say that I'm accountable. I did it. I'm guilty. I have nobody to blame but Jerry Vallone.
Well, let me tell you something, brother. You don't need to be in the prison system to play the blame game. That goes on all day, every day, unfortunately. But, man, I'll tell you what. We've already gone an hour and 10 minutes or so. I could go another hour with you, Jerry, but we'll cut this interview short. It's Sam Crowley from EverydayOfSaturday.com talking with Jerry Vallone about his book, Rising from the Ashes. His life as a killer, a convict who survived over 37 years in 17 prisons, and a man who really did beat the odds. So, Jerry, we'll wrap it up right where we started today. I don't know about you, man, but I think it's absolutely wild that I called that ad off Craigslist, and you came down, and here we are talking on the phone. Isn't that wild?
Wow. And just I can actually say I wish I would have made a list of all the crazy things like this that have happened. And I come to expect them, I believe. You know, it's like I feel that I'm led by the Spirit. I feel I've been blessed. I feel that, man, there's great things coming for me. It's like, so I really don't get amazed at it. I kind of like almost expect it every day. Every time my phone rings, maybe that's the phone call. Or I turn on my computer. Maybe the email's there. And if it doesn't, I say, well, that's going to happen tomorrow. But, you know, I'm not sitting back for it to happen either.
Yeah, you know what's wild is I learned a lot about you in my driveway that morning when, you know, we were hauling all that plaster and lath into the back of your truck and the trailer, and I never told you what I did, a speaker, a trainer, seminar leader, anything like that. I wanted to find all about you. You gave me your book. It was awesome. And then I came home and I told my wife about it, and obviously she's like, what? Who was at our house? You know, and so I said, you know what? That's just to my wife, because she knows. I give everybody way, I'm to a fault. Like, I give everybody so much slack, to prove me wrong. And I've had so much money stolen from me. So many people have done me wrong. But I don't stop giving people an opportunity. And I certainly never stop getting to know new people and making friends. But my wife's like, oh, boy, here we go again. You know, here we go, Sam, bringing somebody else into the circle now that, you know. But anyway, I came home and I grabbed one of my books and I said, I'm going to write Jerry a nice note and I'm going to send him off one of my books. And I don't know, you know, what he's going to think or read it or not read it or what, but I just want to let him know that his story had an impact on me. So I autographed it, put a little note in the book for you there, and thank you for coming out to my house. And when you got that book, I didn't tell you anything I did. When you opened up the package, did it take a minute to hit you who it was from or what it was?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I had no idea. No, I didn't. But I sat down, and like a day and a half, I read it. I read it from, and I called you even, told you, and thank you for sharing your story. Because even though we came from different environments, different world, I mean, I felt everything that you experienced. And, you know, I've lived around evil people, and, you know, I thought people I could trust. And, man, but I haven't lost, man. I love people. I love doing what you're doing. I mean, I love listening to people's stories. And people say, wow, it's just hard to believe that, you know, somebody who is so filled with hatred and anger. And when people meet me, and I always say, it's like the little kid once told me, he says, you know, for a murderer, you're not a bad guy. And that's really what it all
is. Yeah. You know? I tell you what, I mean, obviously, if you meet someone, you never think they've had that kind of a past. So I don't think anybody would ever be able to guess that. But I would say the same thing. You know, I've never met anybody who has that type of past, that, you know, resume that you have. But I'm all about second chances, man. Lord knows I've had second, third, fourth, fifth chances given to me. I've messed up a lot, and I think it's just a matter of degrees at that point. And I grew up in a family. You know, my mom raised 8 of us. There was a lot of love there, and, you know, I didn't have that upbringing you had. So I'm happy, man, that you're out there, number one. You've got a second chance. I think you definitely deserve it as far as how our system works here in the United States, because we have listeners all around the world. And then secondly, that you're – every day trying to add value. You know, as we record this, we're coming up on March of 2013, as of the date of this interview, your phone's going to start ringing off the hook. You're looking straight down the barrel of 18-hour work days. You're 60 years old, and that's exciting to you, right? I mean, you want to get up and have that kind of day.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so it's not about, oh, boy, I got to get through. It's about you want to work. And I think it's all about perspective, man. You've got an opportunity to get a second chance at life. You're making the best. You got a great book. You're out there speaking to high school, colleges, and churches. And I know your story's been featured on the Christian Broadcast Network and the 700 Club. And I'll tell you what, Jerry, you've inspired me, man. And on behalf of everybody in our community from EverydaySaturday.com, I just want to thank you for coming on board. And I'll be back up in New York in about a month or so, and I'll connect with you. We'll grab a cup of coffee.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Thank you for having me here.
You got it, buddy. Take care, everybody. That's Jerry Ballone. Pick up his book. If you can Google Jerry, just check it out, Rising from the Ashes. Jerry, let me ask you, how can people connect with you? Facebook or your website or anything? How can
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on BranchOut. I'm on LinkedIn. All they have to – and my email is my initials. My name is Gerald T. Ballone. So what I did is my business is GTB. I knew in prison – that I wanted to come out here and do speaking. So my GTB Speaks LLC is my business. GTB Speaks at yahoo.com is my email, and GTB Speaks at .com is my website. So
awesome.
All about that. Yeah, I had a vision of what I wanted to do out here, and I'm doing it.
So GTBSpeaks.com, is that right?
That's my GTBSpeaks at yahoo.com. That's my email. And then I can be under Jerry Ballone. I'm on Facebook. I'm everywhere. Twitter at Jerry Ballone. I'm on BranchOut, LinkedIn. I've learned social media, and like you talked about it in your book and how important it is. And, you know, one person at a time. You know, that's how I do it.
You're one connection away, man. Maybe there's somebody listening here. It's, you know, GTBSpeaks at yahoo.com. It's Jerry Ballone, B-A-L-O-N-E, and you can look him up online. And you really are, Jerry. You're one connection away from really getting this story to explode. Maybe it's one of our listening audience. Maybe it's an indirect way. But I'll tell you what, man, you're on the right track. You're doing good now in the world. You're adding value. And thanks again for coming on board, man. It's been awesome today. Thanks so much, Jerry.
Thank you.
And there you have it. A month later, Jerry was dead, and I was really it was just wild. So here's my closing thoughts on this whole 4-part interview series with Jerry Ballone. You know, when I called that Facebook ad, I remember like it was yesterday. It was cold. It was February of 2013, and I was in this big empty Victorian home in Western New York, and it was just a ton of snow outside. And when I say cold, it's that type of cold when you wake up in the morning. You don't even want to get out and try to start your car because you're going to be frozen by the time you even get to the car door. But I was doing all this demo work that week, and I called that ad on Facebook, and then I didn't know what to expect because Jerry certainly didn't tell me on the phone his whole story. I didn't get that out of him until we were loading all these heavy bags. And, I mean, these bags weighed 100, 200 pounds. I mean, plaster and lath jammed into these garbage bags. And he was hauling them down one, two at a time. This guy's 60 years old, and that's kind of where I just got, well, first of all, how nice his vehicle was in the trailer and the fact he had these degrees that he talked about in the ad. He was just a fascinating person. And so when we started just bringing the bags down, that's when I started asking, like I talked about in the show, what do you do, where you been, things like that. And so when I left Jerry and he, you know, I paid him like a couple $100 in cash, and he went to take all this stuff to the dump. I thought about him the rest of the day. I drove back to Cincinnati and thought about him on the way home. I read his book in a day because it's an easy read. And then we started texting each other, and he was texting me. He wanted to learn how to get his message out and to be a speaker. And I was like, hey, we're going to share the stage together, because he was speaking already to churches and schools and things like that, which is what I wanted to do more of anyway. And it was a great 1-2 punch. We were kind of like the odd couple, you know. And because I have lived this very reserved life, you know, I know I'm a renegade in the entrepreneurial world and, you know, quit my job, but I'm not anybody that would go out. I've never been in prison. I've never been arrested. I've never tried a hard drug. I'm really completely different than Jerry, who spent his whole life in the system, but yet here we met. And we had these big plans, and we were texting each other back and forth all throughout the month of February of 2013, right into the beginning of March. I've got his voicemail still. And I saved his last text message that says, "Hope we can speak soon." And that was the day before he died. "Hope we can speak soon." And I had it on my, you know, agenda. I was going to give him a call. And then I see on social media, somebody had hit me up on Facebook saying Jerry died in his sleep the next day. And we had these grand plans, and they never happened. And I actually shot a YouTube video with kind of like my tribute to Jerry Bologna. You can find it on my YouTube channel every day of Saturday, my tribute to Jerry Bologna, right around March of 2013. And I just said, son of a, you know, it's like, I don't know, man. He had so much to give. Like he had just so much wisdom to give back. He never tried to, you know, he wasn't out to make amends for the three murders that he committed. When I say that, I mean, he did what he did, and he owned it. He didn't want anybody to say, "Oh, Jerry, that's okay." He knew it wasn't okay. He knows the most heinous thing he could ever do, times three. But he also believed in redemption. He found God in prison, and he wanted to get his message out. And I just, for all those reasons, I was very sad, and I'm still sad 2 years after, that Jerry and I never got a chance to hit the stage together, because it would have been a very special moment. But I still try to honor Jerry and his message out there, and get this message to you. And I just think back how crazy it is that there was 100 ads on Facebook that I could have called, and he had that one that day in February of 2013 that I just happened to pick up the phone, call, and the next day he was there, and here we are doing an interview together. So I hope you enjoyed it. You can leave feedback at Sam Crowley on Twitter. Send me an email, sam@everydaysaturday.com. And I guess the moral of this story is, don't be afraid to reach out to a stranger. There are so many fascinating people in the world. It doesn't need to be a famous person, a movie star, a sports, an athlete, anybody you see on TV. It can be your neighbor, man, that's got the most fascinating story that just leaves you in just, wow. And the message that they carry, man, Jerry Bologna, what a message he's got. Thanks so much. It's Sam Crowley, host of the Everyday Saturday podcast. Have the best day ever.
Thank you for listening to the Everyday is Saturday podcast. Still fired up and want more of Sam Crowley? Be sure to visit everydayissaturday.com. And don't forget to follow Sam on Twitter @SamCrowley. Let Sam know you're listening. Use hashtag Everyday is Saturday.